ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Ants are pretty much ubiquitous. There's an estimated 20 quadrillion of them on the planet. I have no idea how they came to that figure, because who could possibly count to that many? But they're one of the most successful species, far outstripping us ordinary humans in population terms. Ant nests are hectic places with a very great deal of work going on to produce highly complicated living arrangements. But how does a creature with a brain, you know, the size of an ant, know what it's doing or what its job actually is? Turns out it's more complicated than you or I might have thought. Anyway, the person to talk to is Tanya Lattie. She's Associate Professor of Entomology at the University of Sydney and is all things ant. Tanya, good evening to you. Welcome to Nightlife.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Do ants really have the size? But I suppose ants do have an ant brain.
They have a teeny tiny brain.
Is it very big?
No, it's very small. So about the size of a grain of sand. It depends on the species of ant, though, because there's a huge range of sizes from teeny tiny little ants to fairly large, say, bull ants.
Yeah, I was going to ask this question. Is a big ant smarter than a little ant?
I don't think we know. I would wager a guess that bull ants are amongst the smarter ants. They seem to be.
Because they've got a big head.
Yeah. I don't know if it's the head so much as the way their colonies are organized. Individuals in bull ant colonies go out and forage on their own, so they're not foraging as a group, which means that individual bull ant needs to learn the way to get to different food sources. She needs to learn how to come back. She needs to know where all the good food sources are in her environment, which probably takes a little bit more cognitive oomph than, say, the ones that are following trails.
When you think about ants, and of course they're all over the joint, and there are usually so many of them, you think, who's in charge here? And this is complicated because, I mean, ant nests do have queens, but it's not like a normal monarchical system. The queens are not in charge.
No, it's really unfortunate that we use the word queen to describe a queen ant, because it makes it sound like she's in charge, and she is not in any way in charge. Her main role in the colony is to make more ants.
Is to be barefoot and pregnant, as it were.
Pretty much. She is the reproductive parts of the colony. If you think of the whole colony as a super organism, then she is the reproductive bit. So that's what she does. She doesn't really control the others.
Can you imagine the levels of ant management, though? There must be, I mean, middle-level management must be massive in an ant colony, isn't it?
No, they're very lucky. They have no management, really. So there's nobody in charge. There's no middle management.
What?
Each individual ant is just following relatively simple rules. But collectively, when you have all of these little individuals doing relatively simple behaviors, you get these collective patterns that far exceeds the intelligence, if you will, of the individuals, which is what makes, I think, ant colonies so fascinating.
So that's the thing. So the intelligence of the colony as a whole is more than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, exactly.
Really?
Yeah, it's like a little bit like the way our brains work. If you think of your individual neurons, an individual neuron can't think. No. It can only really do a really small number of behaviors. But when you put billions of neurons together and they're all, you know, communicating with one another, you get a brain that can do all these complicated things. It's kind of the same with the ant colonies.
This is Tanya Lattie. She's an expert on ants, and we're talking about ant colonies. So hang on. So how do they know? Yeah, but there's a lot of them. I mean, people have got to have roles, don't they?
I mean,
how do they work out who's doing what job? I mean, in the morning when in the morning after ant breakfast, who decides who goes where?
So different individuals will have different roles. It depends a bit on the species, but in some species, that's tied to how old you are. So when you're a young, new ant, you're in the colony doing jobs like looking after the young and keeping it clean. As you get older, you move more towards the outsides of the colony. And eventually the last job many species will do, or many individuals and species will do, is foraging. But it does depend on the species. For some ants, it's just wherever you are is where you're working. So if you're in the middle of the colony, great, you are now on childcare duty. If you happen to be wandering around the edge, great, you're now foraging.
What do ants actually eat?
Oh, it depends on the species.
Because they're very small things. I mean, how could they? I mean, most things are too big to eat, aren't they?
No, teamwork. So they can hunt collectively. They're able to find food collectively, and they actually feed on a whole range of things. Some are seed eaters, so they'll
sugar in my pantry cupboard.
Yep. Some of them farm livestock, so they'll have colonies of aphids that they will protect from predators. And then when they want sugar, they tap the aphid just gently on its butt, and it produces a drop of sugar water that they then harvest, and that's their main sugar source.
Wow.
But that's not even the most amazing example, in my mind, of that agriculture, are the leafcutter ants, because they build these massive colonies. where they go out in the hundreds of thousands and collect leaves from all over the rainforest.
Yeah.
But they're not eating the leaves directly. What they're actually doing is they mash them up into like a paste, mm-hmm. and they use that paste to feed a specialized fungus, and it's the fungus that they eat. So they are essentially mushroom farming for a living. And, I mean, that's fascinating in and of itself. But those fungus gardens can sometimes get contaminated with bacteria or other fungus, which they don't want. They're like the weeds in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And so other ants will have specialized patches on their bodies that produce an antibiotic or an antifungal that they'll then apply to the garden as like a form of natural pesticide, which is wild.
Isn't that so they do. They practice some form of agriculture.
Yeah, they do. I would argue ants evolved agriculture long before we did.
So they always live in nests, don't they?
Yeah.
The ant colonies. There's no such thing as a free dogging ant. Just, like out on the range, as it were.
No, they're very social animals. They like to be in colonies. I mean, the size of that colony varies. Some are very small with just tens of individuals, but some can be hundreds of millions of individuals big. Mm.
You know how we as humans don't seem to be able to get on. But ants do. Or do they? Do they go to war against each other?
They sure do. So ant colonies will fight one another for territory. Mm. Australian meat ants, which many of us I'm sure have seen, they make these really big mounds. And they maintain territories. And the boundary between two colonies is maintained first up by dancing. So if an ant sees one of the other that's not a member of her nest, she'll do a very ritualized display. Mm-hmm. The other ant will display back. They'll do that a bit, and they can use that most of the time to settle their boundaries. It does break down in times, and when it does, they go to war. They fight each other.
I think the biggest ant I've seen is probably I think Tassies would call them an inchman, but I suppose that's a kind of bull ant.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty big ant.
It is a very sizable ant.
Is that as big as ants get or no?
No, there are some bigger species. Not even close. I mean, there are some large species in, I believe, the Amazon.
Right.
Quite large.
Course,
I think that's where the biggest ones are.
Of course they are.
But having said that, some of our bull ants in Australia are getting pretty close.
Yeah.
Pretty close to being the largest ants.
Yeah. They can bite you. Hang on. All beekeepers have been bitten. Have you been bitten by ants? Of course you have.
Yeah, I've been bitten by many, many ants. The fun thing is it's not necessarily the bite, because many ants can also sting. So they bite you and then they swing around and it's the sting that really gets you.
Oh, in the tail.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So bull
ants
can sting.
Why do they bite you anyway?
Oh, they just need to get a grip around to sting you. But often it's because they're protecting their colony. Sometimes it's because, you're near their food source. They're not going to attack you. For me, it was because I was standing on top of their nest and didn't know it. So many of them ran up my pant leg and it didn't go well from there.
I wish you hadn't said that. See, everyone listening's got the heebie-jeebies now. Ants in your pants.
Occupational hazard.
They're not under threat, ants, are they?
Well, it depends on the species. So we do have threatened ant species in Australia. Right. There's, I believe it's called the dinosaur ant, which is a threatened species. I think the problem is we're not really keeping track of the numbers of many of our ant species. We just kind of assume they're all going to be everywhere all the time.
There's millions of them, Tanya.
There are millions of some of them. But I'm sure there are species here that are threatened that we just haven't noticed. And ants are super important for the ecosystem. I mean, these little animals are really holding our ecosystems together, and they deserve more.
This is what I always worries me. Down at this kind of small level is where all the important stuff is kind of happening, isn't it? I mean, we all worry about big animals because we can see them, but down at this tiny micro level in the soils and where these tiny creatures are, that's where all the stuff is happening that enables that chain all the way up to survive.
Yeah,
isn't it?
They're carrying the whole world on their little shoulders, the insects are. And we ignore that at our peril, I think.
Yeah. Why do they seem so strong? Are they actually strong for their body size?
Well, that's a good question. I think that they are. I'm not sure how much stronger they are than a human. I imagine it has something to do with the way their muscles and their exoskeleton work, but I don't know.
They've got, that's right, they've got I mean, the massive mandibles that the bull ant has, for example, I know I'm obsessed by this, but that's used for, grabbing stuff?
Yeah.
It's not really meant to, they're not sword wielding as such. They're
I think they often use it to catch prey.
Yeah.
So blants will mostly scavenge, but they will sometimes go out and hunt other insects. And so they've got those big mandibles, which make them very good at that. It's also great for defending your nest, because who's going to mess with a blant?
Same with a jack jumper. Why do jack jumpers jump? Because they do. They jump quite high.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess they can. Why not?
So you say they defend their nest. Do they prey on each other? I mean, it's a big ant. I mean, you know, a bit like fleas and the famous aphorism about fleas. Do bigger ants prey on littler ants?
I mean, I've certainly seen ants, usually the other way around, actually. I've seen smaller ants attacking bigger ants, because there's something to be said for having a large number of small critters. They'll just pin down bigger ants and pull them apart.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're doing it as a way of defending themselves or as a way of predation. I'm not sure.
Mm. They're insects, of course. I mean, have ants had occasions to talk to bees? Because, after all, beehives are very complicated places, as we know.
Mm.
Been a lot of work done on bees and beehive dances and the way bees navigate and all that sort of stuff. It's incredibly complex.
Yep.
Have the ants had a chat to the bees?
I don't know.
Or are the ants less complicated than bees?
Oh, I don't think the ants are necessarily less complicated. I think there are way more social species of ant than there are social species of bee.
Okay.
And so the ants are cool to study, because you get this whole range of different ways of organizing that colony in different levels of, you know, cognition, different levels of organization. Whereas mostly with the social bees, we're normally talking about honeybees. Those are the ones we know the most about. Some of our stingless bees, which are in Australia, and then a few bumblebees, which we don't have here except in Tasmania, where they were accidentally introduced. So there's just so much more diversity of colony structures in ants.
Yeah. Ants exist everywhere, don't they? Except for Antarctica.
Because, yeah.
Well, there's very few animals exist outside of the oceans. Of course, the oceans teeming with life in Antarctica, but the land is not. It's just too cold, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much anywhere on land that isn't Antarctica, you'll get ants. Not always all year round. Like, I'm from Canada originally, and you don't get ants in the winter because they need to go into the ground to hibernate. But during the summer, plenty of ants.
You got any ant farms at home?
Not at the moment. I have in the past, but my family's been pretty clear about no more ant farms in the house.
Tanya Lati's with us. Tanya is an associate professor of entomology at the University of Sydney. And we're talking about ants. I mean, I know you say no one's in charge, but do we have any understanding of how, in an ant nest where there could potentially be a million ants, how order is maintained? I mean, what if one ant just decides to go feral?
So I guess one important thing to remember about ants is it's not like a human city where we're all not particularly well related to one another.
No.
All the ants in a colony are usually sisters. In fact, many cases, because of the way their genetics
work, they're all sisters.
They're all sisters, pretty much. So all the worker ants you've ever seen are female.
Is that right?
Yeah, the males don't do much. They mate and then they die, and that's kind of their role.
They mate with a queen.
Yeah, they mate with a queen, not necessarily their queen, but yeah.
And then they die.
Yeah, and
okay.
The way that sex is determined in ants and also honeybees is a little complicated, because fertile eggs, so eggs that have been fertilized, they can develop into females. And so from that, females, again, workers or a queen. And then the unfertilized eggs become the males. So that's how sex is determined. So the workers are, because they don't mate, they're not usually able to make other queens or other workers.
Mm-hmm.
In some species, they can produce males, which, again, don't do very much for the colony. And again, that's why the queen's so important.
So basically any ant you've ever seen is a female.
Pretty much. Unless you're looking at a mating swarm, you've probably seen a female ant.
Wow. So females rule the ant world.
They do. They are all of the important ones.
I love this. Other amazing things about ants. Do they eat anything?
Are they
omnivorous? Some of the, are they? Do they?
Depends on the species.
Or are they highly specific about what they eat?
I mean, there are very specific ones, like the fungus farming ants, for example. Yeah, they mostly do that. Some will eat a little bit of everything. Others will specialize on seeds. Some specialize on being scavengers. So, yeah, they're hugely diverse. It's hard to say one thing that's common across all the different species. There's, I think, around 16,000 identified species of ant on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely less than there actually exist. We estimate that there's probably at least 20,000.
Really? You know, they said, when I said there were estimated 20 quadrillion. I think if you had to count to a quadrillion, it would take you thousands of years.
I think it has 17 zeros at the end. Yeah. So I mean, it's more than there are stars in the Milky Way galaxy for context. Yeah. So it's a lot of ants.
Yeah. We look at ants and, you know, sometimes people use the analogy, don't they, looking down on a big city and say, look, it's just, I look down at all those ants down there, you know, speaking about humans. But in fact, there's no real comparison, is there? Not really.
I don't think so. I mean, I think there's things we can learn from them about how to organize big collective systems, because a lot of
Well, they're
our
not organized. You just told me that.
They're organized, but they're not organized in a hierarchy. So there's no one in charge. It's a self-organized system. So the system just kind of emerges from all of these behavioral rules. And that's really
One ant speaks to another.
Yeah, more or less. One ant does one thing, another ant responds to it. So for example, if an ant finds a really good food source somewhere, she, in some species, she'll lay a trail of chemicals called a pheromone back to the nest.
Okay.
Another ant will come out and say, where's the most pheromone? Over here. She follows that and she reinforces it. And so what ends up happening is this sort of snowball effect where the really good food sources get more ants. So there's more pheromone, which attracts more ants. Things that aren't so great get fewer ants, which attracts less ants, and those trails fade away. And so even though every individual ant may only know where one food source is, the colony itself actually knows where potentially hundreds of food sources are, and it knows what colony or what quality they are.
I see. Hey, what would you like to discover about ants that you don't know?
Oh, everything. Everything. I mean, we've been talking about how they're organized, but we actually only know the details of that for a tiny number of species.
Yeah.
We haven't really gone and figured out how colony organization works for the vast majority of species. In fact, we haven't even named the majority of species on this planet, likely. Mm. So I would love to know all of those things.
And we don't know how to get rid of fire ants, which is, which is a problem too. Tanya, fascinating. The Secret World of Ants, Tanya Lutty. If you need to know anything about ants, get a hold of her. You can find her at the University of Sydney. I may have made your life miserable here. Been terrific talking. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.